bestow his benediction upon me by opening his lotus eyes. He can uplift the entire cosmic creation and remove our dejection by kindly speaking his directions. Translation. The Lord, who is supreme,
and is the oldest of all,
is unlimitedly merciful.
I wish that he may smilingly bestow
his benediction upon me.
By opening his lotus eyes.
He can uplift the entire cosmic creation. And remove our dejection. By kindly speaking his directions. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord is ever increasingly merciful upon the fallen souls of this material world. The whole cosmic manifestation is a chance for all to improve themselves in devotional service to the Lord. And everyone is meant for that purpose. The Lord expands himself into many personalities who are either self-expansions or separate expansions. The personalities of the individual souls are his separated expansions, whereas the self-expansions are the Lord himself. The self-expansions are predominators, and the separated expansions are predominated for reciprocation of transcendental bliss with a supreme form of bliss and knowledge. The liberated souls can join in this blissful reciprocation of predominator and predominated without materially concocted ideas. A typical example of such a transcendental exchange between the predominator and the predominated is the Lord's Rasa Lila with the gopis. The gopis are predominated expansions of the internal potency, and therefore the Lord's participation in the Rasa Lila dance is never to be considered like the mundane relationship of man and woman. It is, rather, the highest perfectional stage of exchange of feelings between the Lord and the living entities. The Lord gives the fallen souls the chance for this highest perfection of life. Lord Brahma is entrusted with the management of the complete cosmic show, and therefore he prays that the Lord bestow his blessings upon him so that he may execute its purpose. Om Aginati Mirandira. The Lord, who is supreme and is the oldest of all, is unlimitedly merciful. I wish that he may smilingly bestow his benediction upon me by opening his lotus eyes. He can uplift the entire cosmic creation and remove our dejection by kind of speaking his directions. Prabhupada refers to the material world here as the cosmic show. It's interesting that he chose the word show. It means that it's real but not real at the same time. We customarily think of as a show as something that's not real, or that the world, sometimes we call it a celluloid, or we talk about Hollywood as Tinseltown. Not real. It's kind of like a dream though, because it seems very real. We can touch it, we can smell it, we can see it, we can hear it, we can feel it, we can taste it. So to think it's not real is kind of a unique and interesting concept. In the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada had one painter paint a painting of the what looks like a film strip or a strip of film. And in a lecture, he compares that to the way our body is changing. I don't know how many frames there are in 1 second, but it's quite a few that the film passes through the projector. I think there's 30 frames a second in the video. But you don't notice it, you just think it's reality. So he compares this to the way the body is changing. The body is changing at every second, at every moment, but we don't notice it. So therefore we think it's real. We look at a little child after some time and we think, oh, you've grown up, grown so big. So, and in ourselves, we don't notice the change because it's happening so quickly. It's happening every moment. He compares it also to a dream. When we're dreaming, we think that's also reality. we actually think that we're at a different place at a different time, perhaps in a different body, maybe flying through space, maybe falling, maybe doing something very wonderful, maybe we're being a king or a queen or something extraordinary like that. And we think it's very real. This is also a way to understand that we are forgetful. We not only know that the body is changing, we not only don't know that the body is changing very rapidly, but we think that it is reality, and we think that the dream is reality. So this is a condition of forgetfulness. Sometimes it's said that we can't remember our past lives because we've changed the body, just like in a dream. We don't have any remembrance or recollection of the fact that we're just laying in bed, for example, with our eyes closed, in a particular body, at a certain age, in a certain status of life, doing a certain thing. That's completely forgotten in the dream state. So in the dream state of our awakened state, which is also a dream state, we forget what we were and who we really are. Therefore, the material world is, as Prabhupada says here, it's like a show. It's not actually reality. It appears to be real, but it's not real. Or as he has often said, it's temporary. It's real, but temporary. So it's kind of real and not real at the same time. Nevertheless, it has to be created. And this is what Lord Brahma is praying for. Prayers to be empowered so that he can figure everything out, how to create everything. All these detailed things that we know exist in the material world, like the atoms and electrons and the chromosomes and the genes, the genomes, they're all part of the mind of Krishna, and he empowers Lord Brahma to create according to these various building blocks of material nature. Lord Brahma is considered very intelligent, and he's often referred to as the engineer rather than the creator, although he's called the creator sometimes. But there's a great difference between engineering and creating something. Today, scientists think that they can create life, or at least some of them do, by cloning or other means. But actually, it's a kind of engineering. We call it genetic engineering sometimes. So theoretically, you could put an ear on a kneecap and you could hear. That's kind of engineering. But it's not really creation. And the example that Prabhupada uses is that of a carpenter. A carpenter is an assembler, but not a creator. The creation comes from somewhere else. The materials that the carpenter uses, for example, or the constructor uses, whether it's sand or concrete or wood, it all comes from earth, or it comes from somewhere else. So, although we're very fond of saying a carpenter or a builder creates a structure, such a person doesn't actually create anything. Lord Brahma is sometimes known as creator, but he doesn't really create anything. He's an engineer. He assembles things, puts things together. And if he does create anything, if he can be considered a creator, his power to create is coming from the Lord. That's said in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, that there is no such thing as creation, that everything that happens is happening by empowering Krishna Nama Sankirtana, Krishna Shakti Vinayi. Everything is empowered. And actually, to do something very unusual or very difficult, like propagating spiritual knowledge in a world that is very retrograde in that respect, requires empowerment. Empowerment is something that is likened to the thing that we might call miraculous. Sometimes people are very amazed at how Krishna consciousness is spreading by people who don't have the material knowledge generally required to extend, and I guess we could call it a spiritual empire, as far and wide as it has in such a short time. It doesn't really tally with conventional wisdom and the ways of doing things. How could temples be constructed? Global communication be established? Books, tapes, all sorts of behavioral patterns that are the same all over the world be established in such a short time. This is due to empowerment, not due to some material thing. So sometimes people think that it's mysterious, so there's something, some secret money being handed under the table to devotees. When we were in the temple in Los Angeles, some of the neighbors thought that it was very strange that that so many devotees, because it was in a very residential neighborhood, they thought it was very strange that devotees were singing and dancing and picking up Prabhupada in a Cadillac. And they became very, very disturbed that they thought there was something underhanded going on for a long time in the beginning. Now they don't think that so much. But that tendency is there, that if something is not understood in a conventional way, it's thought to be somehow wrong or illegal or under the table. But it's not actually, it's empowerment. And empowerment is something we have very little understanding of. What does it mean to be empowered by Krishna? So the miracle of Krishna consciousness is a result of empowerment. I think Shyamasundara was talking about dollar bills floating down from the sky, $100 bills, in one of the videos. That's still happening, actually. I mean, we don't see the $100 bills floating down from the clouds, but all over the world, I think we calculated once it was maybe $100 million were coming in and being spent, something to that effect. But there's no sort of regular source. There's no products being sold. There's no services being sold. It doesn't really happen in the ordinary way through some management system, but it's happening through empowerment. Just like Lord Brahma, I mean, how do you create a universe? How is it possible to get such knowledge? You can't learn in the library how to create a universe. But somehow he was given knowledge to the heart, how to do it, and he figured it all out. And he meditated for long, long, as we were reading in this chapter, many, many thousands and thousands of years to understand how to do it. He remembered everything, how to do it, and then he just put it together, step by step. So that's what Prabhupada calls the cosmic show. And he says that sometimes we hear about or we read about the rasa dance. He says this is the highest perfectional stage of exchange of feelings between the Lord and the living entities. And he talks about the predominated living entities, mamai bhamsu jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manasha manindriyani prakriti stani karshati. Every living entity is part of Krishna, but some are separated, and their duty or their reason for existence is to serve. He writes in the first canto, in one of the purports, that the relationship of the server and the served is the most confidential form of intimacy. Everyone is seeking a kind of intimacy or a perfect relationship, we might say. Adidati pradigranati guyam akarti pricchati. Guyam akarti pricchati means we reveal our minds to people that we want to reveal them to, who we want to be intimate with. Prabhupada is saying here that intimacy is realized in its highest form between the server and the served. That concept is very anathema to modern thinking. In modern thinking, we deign to serve no one. We don't want to be served by anyone. It's unnatural. But spiritual life means that our life is based upon service. It's based upon doing something, or we call it devotional service. Devotional service is not an ordinary kind of service. In our usual exchanges in the material world, we serve, but we don't get recompensed. There's no such thing as reciprocation. Or some poet said that gratitude is thy marble-hearted friend. There's no proper reciprocation in the material world. Whereas in the spiritual world, Krishna guarantees a kind of exchange or reciprocation. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So there is never a loss. It seems in devotional service that we have to actually give everything up. Surrender, and it means giving up. Giving up what we have, what we think, what we own, what we do, and just renouncing it and walking away from it and leaving it alone. In Krishna consciousness, however, whatever we give up, it's returned back to us many times over. A phenomenon that's unheard of in the material world. Therefore, this kind of tapasya, or renunciation, is actually beneficial for us, because not because we want everything. According to what we read, the act of serving, of performing devotional service, is in and of itself the return. It's the happiness, the benefit, the joy. But Krishna is so kind that even materially, he rewards us. He gives us what we have just completely forgotten about. One of the examples in the Srimad Bhagavatam is that of Sudama Brahman, who is extremely poor and emaciated, living in abject poverty. He met Krishna. Krishna was very kind to him, as he always is to his devotees, washed his feet, gave him a place to sit, fed him. And Sudama, although he was prompted by his wife to ask for some material benefit, he forgot completely about it. He was just so happy seeing the Lord, seeing Krishna, that he forgot completely, lost his memory about what he was supposed to have come for. And later, as he left Krishna and was walking back to his home, he remembered what he had come for. He thought, I really didn't want that. And in fact, it was a ridiculous thing to ask for any kind of material benefit. And at that point, as it is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when he was alone and walking back to his home, he thought, this is it. This is perfection. I don't need anything. I don't want anything. This poverty that my better half decided that wasn't really right for us is actually all I need. And at that point, he began to emerge upon his home, and he saw that it had been converted into a beautiful palace. The wife was standing at the threshold with beautiful garments, and there were jewels on the outside glittering in the sunlight and so on. So he didn't actually want all these things, but he was given them back because Krishna wanted him to have them. So in that sense, he was empowered. Devotees who are followers of Prabhupada and the disciplic succession and devotees of Krishna, they're also experiencing a similar kind of opulence. There are many temples, and some are like in Europe anyway, like palaces. And there's no shortage from a material calculation. Devotees, if they want to travel or they want to eat very nicely or whatever they want, whatever they don't want, it's all there. But we're given just enough to make it possible to perform devotional service and to spread Krishna consciousness. It's not an ordinary thing. It's described in the Chaitanya Bhagavat that when Lord Chaitanya wanted Kulavaisya Sridhar to say some prayers, and he said, oh, I can't say any prayers, I'm useless, I'm a nothing. Well, I don't even know how to speak properly. How can I say prayers? And he said, that's okay, whatever you say, it's a prayer. Just say something. I'll give you a boon. I'll give you the 8 mystic cities. I'll give you a kingdom. You can be the king. And he was just cowering. I can't say anything. I don't want anything. So it's described by Vrindavan Das Thakur, who is considered the Vyasadeva of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, that the goddess Saraswati then entered his mouth and he began to speak very mellifluously, very beautiful prayers with perfect meter and with deep realizations, because he was empowered by the Lord. He was empowered by Lord Chaitanya to speak these very deep and very beautiful prayers. Of course, one could write whole books about these prayers. And we'll go into them at any length, but they're very wonderful. So he was empowered. This is the process of empowerment, that somehow people are given whatever knowledge they need to progress and advance the Krishna consciousness. And that becomes unknown or unmiraculous or taking place in a kind of dimension that we're not familiar with, that people aren't familiar with. And so they sometimes think that something untoward is going on, something. If something is misunderstood or invisible, there's a tendency to think that, put it up to something that's improper or wrong. That's a materialistic conception. So Lord Brahma was empowered, just like all devotees of Krishna are empowered to spread devotional service. Actually, spreading devotional service is not an easy thing to do, because the world in which we live is very against devotional service. So to convince anyone about devotional service, to create a spiritual foothold or beachhead in a very materialistic world, is not something that can be done by materialistic calculation. It has to be done by empowerment. It's not easy to do. So everything that happens in Prabhupada's movement is done by a process of empowerment, the same kind of empowerment that Lord Brahma had to learn how to create the universe. That kind of notion is there. This is a way, we might say, of reclaiming the separated expansions of Krishna who are part of the material energy, mano radhena sati avatovihi, who in one sense are devoid of the qualities required to advance in Krishna consciousness, and yet the miracle is that those separated parts and parcels can become an integral part and parcel and act to spread Krishna consciousness, as Lord Brahma does in his way. So I'll read the verse again. So sab adhavra karana bhagavan vibridha prema smitena nayanam buruham vijrimham utaya vishva vijaya chano vishadam madhva kirapanataya purushapurana. The Lord who is supreme and is the oldest of all is unlimitedly merciful. I wish that he may smilingly bestow his benediction upon me by opening his lotus eyes. He can uplift the entire cosmic creation and remove our dejection by kindly speaking his directions. So there's two things here that are important in the verse, that our depression and sadness can be alleviated, not by Prozac and Bailey, but by just gazing into the eyes of the Lord, we become very happy and very blissful. It's here. And secondly, if we know what the Lord really wants, like Ya'idam Paramam Guyam, to spread the glories of Krishna consciousness, and we actually carry that out, those can be considered the directions of the Lord as interpreted to us and given to us through Srila Prabhupada, we can become successful and happy. So, any comments? Yes, Paul.
In the purport, the gopis are predominant in expansion of the internal potency and therefore the role of participation in the rasa dance has never been considered like a mundane relationship of man and woman. The jiva is marginal energy.
Mm-hmm.
So can the jiva ever become a gopi?
Oh yeah, why not?
How?
By
how does marginal turn to internal?
By being pure and by being free of any envy in the heart. If one is completely free of envy, one can advance to the spiritual world and become part of Krishna's internal energy. It's possible to attain that, to advance from being a jiva to Krishna's internal potency. It's very difficult, it's not ordinary, but when we become pure in the spiritual world, even though we maintain our individuality, we can be considered part of the internal energy of the Lord.
So all souls in this spiritual world are internal?
Not all, but we can be considered to be, there's the potential that we can develop that perfectional stage of life. But not all souls are. They still have their jiva individuality, but it's possible they can become part of the eternal energy of the Lord. Not easy, but possible. Not ordinary. Yes?
Can you explain the internal energy more?
Well, the internal energy is part of Krishna. Krishna is as it's mentioned here, in two ways. He has his separated energies of the material world, he has his internal potencies. So, part of the internal potency, because Krishna is so great, he wants to enjoy himself. It's described that he doesn't even know the extent of his own beauty and his own mind. And sometimes when he sees his own reflection, it's described in Srimad Bhagavatam on a marble floor, for example, he's struck with the beauty of it. That's part of the internal potency. If we love ourselves,